Welcome. I'll just take a second or a minute to tell you of who I am. I'm originally an engineer, studied civil engineering, worked for it 3-4 years, didn't like it, and knew this is not what I wanted to do. And then I was very fortunate of getting to know someone that has taught me a lot, so I went with him into an oil and gas company where we did a lot of mergers and acquisitions of smaller companies for like 4 or 5 years. And then I moved into mining, into a lot of operations, blue collars, export and import, dealing with government. And then I was very tired from the business world. I moved into the NGO world, where they needed to bridge the business world with the NGO world. So I was just lucky to be in that path. So I'm doing a lot of part-time things now. So in my NGO work, I'm handling their funding, but I'm also working with their businesses, trying to, they have 4 or 5 different businesses. One of them is a hospital we're going to be talking about today. And I'm trying to increase the local content where the whole NGO, it's pretty large, that it does not depend on any external funding, where our funding is generally generated internally. And I've also started a business 3 years ago in microfinance in Egypt, which is going very well. And then this month, I'm starting a new business, a startup actually, trying to, microfinance, I found is too expensive for the people. So I'm doing a new portal that links, that wants to target people who regularly give their money as charity, that is very intransparent and hard to track and impact. I want to convince them to do it as a loan. So I'm going to portray with them businesses of SME, small medium enterprises, where they can borrow through that portal, and charity funds are channeled as loans, and then they're returned interest-free, and then the impact of each dollar and pound is multiplied. So it's fun. Life is always interesting. And this is where I've learned this. So I'm going to just share what I know, and hopefully I'll learn a lot from you guys. Let me start with efforts. In my work in CEOS, which is a large NGO in Egypt, I have seen a lot of efforts being done. There's a lot of solutions on different parts. We're facing social problems all around the world. We're facing poor nutrition, access to water, poverty, climate change, food shortages, healthcare coverage, and pollution. Probably our parents went through that, and our grandparents went through that, and then 400 years ago, everyone is still suffering from that. Different percentages, different weights, but still, we're all suffering from the same problems. And we're going through the same cycles of trying to fix, change, and get new technology, get new innovation, but these problems are still living on. On the other hand, businesses also have a lot of problems. They have human resource problems, they have raw material problems, they have labor costs, political influence that is extremely heavy, like we've seen in the war in Ukraine, sales and marketing issues, logistics, inflated costs. It's like two worlds. Businesses want to solve their issues and get things rolling, and us people, not in the business world, we're living in our own social problems and want to fix that. And the bigger problem is that, yes, there are different worlds, but business is mainly seen as the problem. Pollution, it's their problem. Poverty, it's their problem, they're hungry. Water, it's Nestle that's buying all the rivers and the lakes, and they're selling the water for people and creating more poverty. We're blaming. It's all finger pointing. These are facts that we have to think of. From my experience, we have a very, very main problem that we cannot scale. I have seen through the last 10 years of working for NGO that there is enormous social efforts and solutions that have been set. We've worked on innovations. So we now have excellent agricultural ideas for poor farmers. Energy, solar energy, wind energy, cookers, low-cost things that can actually save a lot of cost. Talents everywhere, prototypes that I've done. Look at Bill Gates with all the question marks on him. But he's done, for example, a lot of efforts to reinvent toilets to produce from manure water and from the waste water manure. Very innovative, and he did prototypes. Bilateral agreements between countries, world initiatives. Look at all the UN work. We've seen a lot of good work being done. Where's the problem? Convention answer would be, businesses should be more responsible. They should pollute less, of course, but also they should give more through CSR. CSR is corporate social responsibility. So businesses are just too busy spending on their own fat paychecks, on their own CEOs, and they're not giving enough to solve the world problems. Although there's innovation, with their money, we can make a difference. Whether we agree or not, all wealth is actually created by business. Other institutions, NGOs, churches, UN agencies, can utilize them to do important work, but only business can create them. That's a very, very important point to stand at. Creation is very important. It's not about usage only, because you can continue to use. It's not easier, but creation is very difficult. So we cannot scale. We've done all these good things, but we can't scale them. We can't multiply them. We have prototypes, but why aren't we making 3,000 of them? Why can't we scale? So the problem is a resources problem. Probably if we have all the money in the world, we would be able to do that. But then who creates money? Business. How do we get money from business? By pushing them to give more, by exploiting them, by trying to put them into agreements, by doing court cases. How do we get money out of more businesses? It's an infinite tug of war. You know the tug of war, you have this game where you pull the rope to let business spoil and then push them to give money to solve. Pollution problems and then solve the rivers. Filters for the cement companies, so they have a lot of gases, but then we have to push them to buy new filters. And businesses don't want to buy new filters now. It's the usual tug of war. We need a change. So we need to change how businesses operate. The only way, in my opinion, to change, to scale, and to make the current problems decrease by using more innovation is through making businesses not give more, but change. Because there's a limit to what they're going to give. They have different priorities sometimes. But the trick is that we both can work together. I'll introduce to you a setup that probably most of you know what it is. There is a pivotal role for social business or enterprises. Let me just classify the three differences. Charity, they're non-profits, non-generating revenue or profits. They can be NGOs, they can be churches, they can be businesses within religious institutions, but it's something that is non-profit generating. It does not do any profit, and it does not generate revenue or profit. So it mostly depends on someone else to help it. On the other side, we have for-profit companies. So they're profit-maximizing, CSR, they're trying to put some social impact, either for publicity or for true conviction. They're considered, but CSR is considered as an add-on to the core business agenda. Some companies like it as a flower on their jacket. Some companies want to do it for good advertising, maybe to attract better staff. It's still within their agenda. I think there's an area in the middle, and this is not my opinion. This is something the whole world has discovered that. There are social enterprises. Call them social businesses, call them social enterprises. It's the most common two names that are around. What are social enterprises? It's a combination of business and social goals, but with emphasis on the latter, with emphasis on the social. Profit is reinvested in the community or the company. To explain it more, profits are realized by the business, are reinvested in the business itself, or used to start other social businesses with the aim of increasing social impact and financial sustainability rather than only fund payouts to shareholders. They do give payouts to shareholders, of course. That's what the business should do, and that's how the business is going to live on. And that's why they create resources. This is the incentive of creating resources. But at the same time, they're not giving the money as CSR. They're not giving it for a certain agenda. Their core is different. Their conviction is different. They need both a combination of social and business enterprises. Let me explain something this is in Egypt, through the work that we do. We have two main entities that operate on that mentality. One of them is this hospital. It's a hospital called Horus Hospital. Horus is the eye of Horus, and he was the famous doctor. So it's an ophthalmology hospital. So it's social and it's business. Let me explain why. It's social because the eye care convoys, we have eye care convoys, we have clinics that are moving on cars, and we send them to poor villages for the most needy areas that work as a referral system. This is an important word to remember. This is a referral system. So they go to the villages, they do all the testing, and then they give the person whoever needs an operation or some medical intervention as, okay, you are coming from a test that comes from this clinic. The referral system includes subsidized fees for eye surgery. So if you come from that route, instead of paying $1,000, I'm going to use dollars so you relate, $1,000, you're going to pay $150. But you're going to pay. Nothing is for free. That's right. That's part of the rights-based approach, that there's dignity in people buying for the service. You don't receive it for free. And there's differential pricing. So the hospital is well situated in terms of technology, doctors, cleanliness, all the medical standards. So there's differential pricing between walk-ins and referred patients from the convoys. So, and this is advertised. This is not something under the table. People walking in know that they are not getting the same pricing. They're getting competitive pricing. We're doing the whole works of businesses. Advertising, offers, bundles with teeth, with abdominal doctors, for children, for women, all kinds of testing. We're doing the whole works of any hospital would, but people walking in know that there's a difference and like that there's a difference. And we give technical training and opportunity to knowledge to transfer to others. And we teach others. This is something that we don't need to do, but we do because this is how you change the community, is you upgrade the technical skills of people. So that's why we're doing the social work. So we're able to give differential pricing, very clear, and classify who needs it most than the other. Why is it business? Because we achieve break-even and surplus for investment. Through the walk-ins and through the normal pricing, we're able to achieve all the surpluses. We're investing in long-term assets and expansion, usually businesses that just get fund and then they want to spend it and wait for the next fund. They want to buy light assets, not long-term, nothing that would produce for a long time, but we're investing as a normal investment hospital in long-term assets. So we just bought, for example, a $3 million LASIK equipment. This is very long-term. This is depreciated on 5 years, and it needs very aggressive marketing, a regular inflow. So we're investing for that because it's making money. And there's potential for accessing ophthalmology consultants for surgeries and outpatient clients. We're even getting consultants we're situated in Minya, which is in the central part of Egypt. But all the big names and the stars are in Cairo. So we bring in consultants. Not a normal business can pay for that. Not a normal NGO, for example, can pay for that. So we're bringing in consultants So we would increase the flow of the hospital. And the social perspective that we have, we're not doing it to show off. It is genuine, and people from the same villages, the rich people sometimes, they know that they have the poor people from the same village are coming in through there. So the social perspective increases the walk-in patients. There are other hospitals that are in competition. They're not doing that. And they're not getting the same inflow related to the eye, to the ophthalmology work. Why? Because they know that everyone going in knows that the dollar that he's paying, part of it is subsidizing another person. And it's not for Christians. It's even for Muslims. Because the desire to help, it's called altruism. It's the feeling that you get when you help others, regardless of gender, race, or religion. So even Muslims are enjoying that. And it's a very clear faith-based hospital. It has the word Coptic, which means Coptic evangelicals. We have Egyptian evangelicals. It's very clear. But they know that every pound is being used for another person. They're not really too far. They are different. Businesses and social work are very different. And they are different worlds. And they do have different perspectives. But I think there's a lot of learning to do. Let me be self-critic here. Our social work, we have good seed ideas. We can start things. We're driven by the heart. So we really come up with very good ideas. We have collective input. So when we have a good idea and you throw it into a church, you find people wanting to help, wanting to think with you. If you have an NGO and you do a survey, you have a lot of people wanting to work with you. And there's social ownership. A social club in a village is really taken care of by the people. So people care about social work. On the other side, with the idea related, actually, ideas are well-rounded. We can come up with an NGO, hey, let's make an app that connects water volumes to land. It's a nice idea, but it's probably not, you haven't studied any cash flow, the clients, marketing, break-even points. You probably have not done that. So the ideas of businesses are a bit more calculated and well-rounded. They do have single and small group inputs. I don't know if it's good or bad, but that's probably the fact. And the ownership is by shareholders. So it's just a small group of people who own the idea, if it's not a public company. Funding usually is public contribution for the social work, longer cycle for sustainability, sometimes really, really long, and sometimes not non-existent. So you are, it's a harsh word, but you are enslaved to others. You are always, always dependent that this good idea lives because other people are convinced. I was having a hard time coming from the business world to the NGO world. It just hurt something in my pride. I don't know why, but I want to be able to have a stronger footage to maintain my good social work. On the other side, funding usually comes from shareholders' capital, banks, and funds. It depends on where you're going. Management. Unclear and qualified targets. So because it's seed ideas, because there's social ownership, so you need to be nice to people sometimes. And, oh, he's a very well-known person, so I'm going to take his idea. And then he's an influential person, so I'm going to take part of his idea. So targets are not really clear and quantified. Weak budgeting and monitoring. That's not in all, of course, but at least that's my analysis. They do have staff inspiration and engagement. A lot of people are engaged, much more than businesses. It's an amazing advantage in social work. On the other side, they have better targets and KPIs, I think. They have strong budgets and reviews because they have to account for each pound, and then when do we break even? What's our cost, our larger cost elements? How do we break them down? How do we cut costs? But there's always, always a challenge in turnover and staff engagement. It depends on the industry, the time of the time of the economy, but usually this is a problem. If you look at startups now in the States, it's something called the startups migration. Everyone is leaving startups and going to different things, either because there's huge demands for technicians, so they're just jumping from one place to another. It depends if they're getting a better position, better salary, whatever the reason is, but it's still a problem. Social impact, bottom line. They have a social impact, they have a double bottom line, that's what we say, but it's mainly social. And financial stability, that's the impact, that's, like I mentioned, it's very, very long. Financial profit drives impact. So the more profits we have in businesses, the more impact they want to do, or the more results, not impact, the more results they want to do. They seem like different worlds. I think there's commonality there. What if businesses can teach social work how to be well-rounded? So the ideas, although they're nice, they're a bit more studied. But what if the social work helps more input to the business? I think they're going to get better ideas. I think they're going to serve more customers. And I think they're going to have more diversity to satisfy more need. What if business helps us to put better targets and KPIs and help us to manage budgets better and to have more control and to have more auditing and to have third-party auditors come and look at our accounts for our accountability and accountability to other people that we work with? We can give them staff inspiration. We can help them connect their staff. If their staff knows that their business is doing something beyond paying extra pounds for the person on top, I think staff is going to treat their businesses differently. The social impact bottom line changes businesses. It changes how they operate, and it changes the people inside the business. And I think a business without a social impact bottom line is losing a lot of the potential that this business can actually help in changing the world. Not only creating resources for a few. The Bible, I think, helps with that and promotes that. You know the parable of the three servants. I'm sure you all know about them. Let's play with it a bit. I'll remind you what it is, and then let's play with it with a business background. So a master has 8 talents. He gives the first servant 5 talents. He gives the second servant 2 talents, and then he gives the third servant 1 talent. They take the talents, and then they decide what they want to do with it. So the first servant made an extra 5 talents. The second servant made an extra 2 talents. So they did both 100%, even though the capital was different. The servant returned the talents. So he buried the money. He's a nice guy. He's very safe. He has done nothing wrong, actually. He has protected the money. He has probably put it under his mattress and then returned it. Let's put in some conclusions from that. Not very church-like. Let's play with the idea. Creating resources and burying money is bad. So what the parable wanted to say is, this is a good example, and this is a good example, and this is not a good example. It was trying to show that. Although he has returned the same, he did not steal, he did not cheat, he did not spend it on prostitutes and pigs like we heard in the morning. The guy returned the same money, but still, these people were commended. So creating resources is something that the Bible is trying to convince us with. Second conclusion: diversification. The master did not give one servant. He gave 3 servants. So he's a guy who understands how things work. You don't put all your eggs in one basket. You diversify. You try and minimize the risk. So when one industry goes down, the other can maybe take it up. So it's helping us to be intelligent of how we use our money, of not being naive, not giving it to someone we trust, by actually thinking it through, and we manage it well. So it's telling us, this is a resource that you have, think of it well. insight. I think that's a very good important. So he did not only diversify. This is a projected conclusion, of course. He did not only diversify, but he gained insight. This guy probably went and bought sheep. So he worked in the sheep industry. Maybe this guy traded with a town, and this guy just went at home. So with insights, he understands now that this range of business can handle the five talents. It can handle a large capital, and it can bring in the same. Although the profitability is the same, but how much capital can it handle? This is another very important insight that you get, because if you do a tea, we call it tea stands in Egypt, where you get a pot and then you sell some tea. How many cups can you buy? It can only take $100 of capital. But you need to know that, hey, you can build a cafe and it will take $3,000 of capital. Knowing that difference teaches you about how to manage your risk and where to put your money. Return versus value testing. So in this industry, my return, I've put a lot of value in and I got a lot of return. These are good insights. Same for the two, the one just buried it. Again, this is just, I'm trying to draw in more the business terms into that. Return versus impact. I have no idea what the impact is, but I would imagine if in this industry he put in five talents of capital and he brought in five others, there's a lot of impact that happened. He has demand. He has an industry that can handle such costs, and probably a lot of impact that this money has been. That's why it's returned. So it left some kind of impact. So you understand efficiency. You can understand how to double your investment. So where to diversify and where to get insight and where to increase your impact. The Bible is encouraging creating resources. Some success stories that might be it's not rocket science. It's not an idea that's very away. I'll give you three success stories, not from the Egyptian context, from mostly Sudanese and from American context. 734 Coffee. It's a brand that is known in parts of Sudan. So it's a social venture dedicated to supporting Sudanese refugees. The business works with local co-ops, normal NGOs, farms in Gambela to grow and harvest coffee, sell products to the U.S. So it connected coffee breeders, coffee planters to the U.S. Look at the bridging of the market. Look at the accessibility that businesses can provide for small farmers with the economies of scale, because these are all small farmers. You get better pricing, you get very good economies of scale, and uses a portion of the profits to fund scholarship for the Sudanese refugees. That's not CSR. That's not money being given on the side. This is genuine help around that. And everyone is making money. The company is making money. Sudanese refugee lives are being changed. And the business is sustainable, and it will probably grow. It's a different mentality. It's combining parts of the money to change the ecosystem of where you're working, not to help. They could have helped also another farm in Egypt. Fine, it's good. But increasing the span of your ecosystem to maximize the effect of your business, I think it's genius. I think it's just escalating to no ends. Toms, I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's a very well-known shoe company. I have personally worked with them. I was just telling Mike here that I've done contact with them and I've imported 70,000 pairs of shoes for children as part of their thing. I was able to convince them with 150,000, and then when it came in, the government was just too alarmed that there are too many shoes coming in. They took half of them, but still, yeah, that's you're in the Middle East. So Toms is something else. Toms is arguably, they put the entrepreneurship on the map, a social entrepreneurship on the map. They have the setup of one-for-one model. Today, if you go and buy Toms shoes, they have a one-for-one. You're paying for the shoe, and they're giving a shoe in return for to change lives. It's phenomenal. You buy a pair of shoes, and Toms will give a pair of shoes to a child in need. Today, buying a pair of Toms shoes or sunglasses provides shoes, sight, water, safe birth, and bullying prevention services to others across the globe. And is that beneficial to Toms? Yes. Is it only in advertising? No. It increases sales. They exist, and they started with shoes, and now they go into sight, water, birth, and coffee. I don't know why they're not mentioning coffee here. They also work in coffee. This is increasing walk-ins for shoes, sales. It's increasing their social stance. Their employees are more they like the company more, so they want to continue working for the company. And look at it on the cost side, economies of scale. If you are producing one for one, you are probably not making 100,000 shoes. You're not buying rubber for 100,000 shoes. You're buying for 200 shoes. You're getting better pricing, better logistics, better imports, better. You're having political influence, because if you are an American company working in Egypt, sending 150,000 shoes, you're getting the government's attention, and so now you're going to have a lot of political weight by, for example, trying to convince them to release prisoners. So you're changing life. You're changing social life by simply maximizing and changing how you do business. The last one is a much simpler one, and I wanted to get a simpler one to tell you that it's you can do it around the corner. A Good Eggs is an online grocery and meal kit delivery service that sees itself apart with fresh local produce and meal kits for a variety of occasions. Their mission: that over 70% of their food, wine, and spirits are locally sourced, so they're local. That's very important. And every item must meet a strict list of sourcing standards. Have children worked in it? What kind of labor costs have been paid? Is there equal pay between men and women? I've personally had this challenge. It was ridiculous. We set up this. We had a plot of land at my work, and then I wanted to change that to plot it with palm trees. So we had workers come in, and we had women and men come in. And then they were doing the same work. I mean, it's not rocket science. It's not too physical. So they're doing the same work. And then people there, it was in Upper Egypt, so it's a bit old-fashioned. They were not paying women the same fee for men. And I was infuriated. I didn't know why. So I instructed that they do that many different times, and they're not doing that. So I had to go pay them a visit, and then what's going on? So they told me that if we do that, men are going to revolt against us, and are going to be physical against the place. So we cannot pay women the same. So we thought, okay. So I thought, look, they're going to take the same. This is not non-negotiable. If not monetary, then let's think of something else. So we came up with the difference of pay. I'm going to give it back into dedicated medical doctors for women, more rest time, and I'm going to give them rice and macaroni for their food, and I'm going to give them childcare if they want. And all this was, and men were happy because they were still getting an extra 2 pounds more than men. But then you feel that women, and you haven't done anything, but you have been socially responsible. I could have not given that and made more money for the farm, or less cost as starters, but then that defies the whole purpose. How are you changing people's lives like that? That's what they do. So all employees also have a stake. Look at that. That's a small stock market. I don't know if you have this in your countries, but where I come from, you can have joint stock companies, and then you can you can give small stock to employees. So they have a stake in the business, so they promote it transparently, they enforce a commitment in health and safety. It's their company. It's their baby. It's their stuff. It is in their land. It's locally sourced. Probably the uncle, the aunt, and the daughter are all owners. They're all suppliers, and they get a percentage of the profit. I mean, there's nothing. This will change the world, in my opinion. My last slide. The idea needs business models. This is something that should be taken as seriously as any business. So some of the most common business model frames and social enterprises use those different techniques. First thing is cross-compensation. So one group of consumer pays for the service. Profits of this group is used to subsidize the service for another. So this is a bit like the hospital. Someone pays and you subsidize for other people. As long as you are fair in classifying and in targeting and in subsidizing. Fee for a service, beneficiary. So the other idea I was telling you about targeting a charity to become loans and then returning them, they're going to be interest-free loans. But I'm doing it like that. I'm giving a fee for the service, and it's a transparent fee. There's nothing hidden. Everyone is signing on it, and it's clear, and it's fair. It has to, and I'm justifying. Why? Because we have staff, we have costs, we have all this and that. So it is fair. Everyone knows what's going on. I don't need the Mercedes from this. I'm being sarcastic, of course. That these businesses should have payouts, but of a different mentality. Employee and skills training. So the core purpose is to provide living wages, skill development, and job training for beneficiaries, the employees. To do what? To create competition. So I'm training cheesemakers. So they have other cheesemakers. And then when I have 10 or 15 different satellite cheesemakers, I have what? I have scale. I have regular supply. I have economies of scale. I have leverage with the supermarket. So when I go to the supermarket, hey, I have 15 different cheese suppliers. So my resources are safe. I can control variety. And I am a safer supplier to you. It's exactly what any supermarket would want. Market intermediary. This is big, at least in Egypt. I don't know about the different sites. For example, we have a problem between the wholesalers and the small supermarkets in the villages. They're not having access to all the products. The wholesalers don't really care. They want to deal with the bigger supermarkets. So there's a gap between the bigger suppliers and the factories of soap, of all commodities, and the ones in the middle. So there's like 7, 8, 10 startups now that have worked on this part. They have an app, and then they're connecting the small supermarkets where they order a minimum of 1,000 pounds of goods, and then they can combine through technology, through fintech, the large number of suppliers, and then they can leverage prices with the wholesalers, and there's a win-win. They get their products, they get cheaper products, and regularly supplied, and it's transparent on fintech. So they have used technology. There's like at least 9 or 10 of those that have done that. I don't think they're realizing that they're doing social business, but they are. They're changing lives. They're creating better pricing, more access for the small farmers, for the small shops, so they would have more surplus to spend on their health, on their kids, on their education. Market connector, this is a bit close to the same example, where the social enterprise facilitates trade relationships between beneficiaries and new markets. This is like the coffee company, where it's a connector between coffee planters and markets in the US. For example, a part of my work too is we're very well known with garlic. So, and a lot of people have a lot of garlic, but they sell it at the beginning of the street, at local markets. But through the packing station that we have, we can channel all the garlic, and I have 2,000 suppliers of different farmers, and we all can collect, and then we've trained workers on how to select, clean, pack, and then freeze, and then it goes to Europe. It goes to the UK. So the farmer, Mohammed Mohammedain, who has never seen beyond 10 meters of his street, has a product that's being sold to Mr. Tom Jones, who is in the districts of London. It's phenomenal, and this is what's being done through the Market Connector. Independent support, the social enterprise delivers a product or a service to an external market, like, for example, fair trade. I don't know if you've heard about fair trade. These are windows that there's support where you support the small farmers, how they plant, how they package, and then it's packaged on fair trade, and it goes outside of the window openings to Europe, for example. So there's something called windows. For example, Europe wants strawberries. A lot of countries have strawberries, so if all the countries send their strawberries at the same time, they won't be able to handle it. So they have something called windows for each country. So Morocco, you have those 2 weeks. Egypt, you have those 2 weeks. Tunisia, you have those 2 weeks. Ukraine, you have those. So that's how, but with fair trade, you can go in regardless of the window. So you're increasing supply, you're opening new markets, everyone, there's a win-win. And cooperatives, this is something more NGO-like, is for-profit and profit, but that are non-profit businesses that are owned by its members, and also uses the service to provide different types of goods. So this is another setup that is not profit-making, but it's surplus-making. Thank you for your time.